Thanks a lot. Thanks for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be back. So it has been a while. I'm excited to be back to Perimeter. I remember this very good. So yeah, today I want to give you an overview of new ways of probing axial-like particles using meson decays. So this is a brief outline of for this seminar. So I will introduce the goal. So the goal, as we see, will be to probe as broadly as possible Lagrangians for axion-like particles or ALPs. So we see what is the most general Lagrangian and how to probe the several pieces. And we'll focus on, as the title says, on meson decays. And we will see that there are two very different ways of probing ALPs, either from neutral current meson decays or charged currents. And we see that indeed, so phenomenologically, these are different decay modes, and also theoretically, we can have different type of enhancements depending on the specific process. And in particular, these charged current meson decays have been quite a bit overlooked in the literature, so we'll discuss them quite a bit. And yeah, for a matter of completeness, I'm putting here a few references that I will present during this seminar. And the goal will be to highlight the processes, experiments, and models that have not been explored before in the literature. All right. So having said that, so let's start with a little bit of introduction. And yeah, please interrupt me with questions if there are any. So the goal will be to probe ALPs that are scalars with an approximate shift symmetry. They are possibly connected with the strong CP problem, not necessarily, and the mass can be protected by an approximate PQ symmetry, so that give us a reason for considering ALPs that have a mass well below the electroweak scale. Now, if you're familiar with the QCD axion, we know that the mass of the QCD axion scale has an inverse proportionality with the decay constant. So it's fixed once that we fix the decay constant. Here we want to be more general than that. So we want to consider masses that are not necessarily connected to the decay constant. And in particular, we want to go to higher masses, okay, compared to the QCD axion line. Yeah, this thing is kind of heavy, actually, for the whole seminar. So if we take this approximate shift symmetry, so that is the full Lagrangian that we can write down. We'll have, of course, couplings of this type with all the gauge bosons of the standard model, SU3, SU2, and U1. And then we can write down all these derivative couplings with quarks and leptons of the standard model. And we'll have a lot of discussion about these couplings here, because there are actually some claims in the literature that are not correct. So this will be actually the last part of the talk. In terms of the couplings with gauge bosons, we can go to the broken phase, and the second and third coupling will generate a coupling with photons. And this is by far the most studied phenomenologically in the literature. So most of the phenomenological studies are based on this ALP photon coupling. Yes? Very good. We'll get there. That is exactly the point I want to discuss. So we'll, but to answer to your question, we'll both consider vector and axial vector couplings, and then we'll see, there will be a lot of discussion about this. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, for now it's just a way to write down coupling to fermions, and we'll discuss later. So having this most general Lagrangian, then the question is how to have a broad program of ALP searches at meson factories. And the reason that I find this quite an interesting topic is that, first of all, from the experimental point of view, we have many experiments that are running. So most of the times we hear about B factories. In fact, we have LHCb and Bell2 that are running and will be producing a lot of B mesons, much more than what we have collected so far. But then also we should not forget that we have also Keon factories and Pion factories. So for the Keon factories, we have an A62 at CERN producing a lot of K-plus charged Keons, and Kotto at JPARC producing neutral Keons. And you see the numbers, we are producing at least one or two orders of magnitude more than in the past experiments, so it's really huge statistics. And even more interesting, for pion experiments, so when I started working on this topic, there were no pion experiments that were planned for the future. And actually, we had a new experiment that was approved last summer. This is called the Pioneer experiment, approved for PSI. And this, if everything goes well, will run in a few years, 2028, collecting at least one order of magnitude more pions than in the past. And if you're curious, I'll put here a reference for this Pioneer experiment. This was the experimental proposal. I am part of the collaboration as theory, helper in terms of studying new physics models at this experiment. And this is the detector that they are planning to build. So the way it works is that you have a charged pion beam. You scatter it against this target here in the middle, and you stop it, and then you look for decays at rest. So you have a calorimeter around here that is supposed to be kind of hermetic, so you should be able to see most of these decay products coming out from the charged pion decay. All right. And here is the statistics that we are supposed to collect in the future, all right?
Your main goal?
Right, so so for phase one, this is the main thing they want to measure. We want to measure it better than the measurement that we have now, maybe by an order of magnitude better. And then for phase two and three, they want to measure instead of the beta decay, so this thing here.
You know why that second decay is? I never understood why it's so. Why do you want to measure that?
Yeah, you can extract actually VUD from here. Yeah. Here is also a little bit more of a question mark compared to this, because here also the theory uncertainties are not that smaller than the experimental uncertainties. Here instead is dominated by experimental uncertainty, so that is the first clear goal. Here a lot more work or so theories will be needed. But yeah, we won't speak much about standard models, more for ALPS, but this is the main standard model goal of this experiment. All right. So what can we do for ALPS? So I also already mentioned in the outline, so we can use flavor change in neutral current decays to produce ALPS from this type of decay modes. So these decay modes have been already studied in the literature, but there are some pieces that are missing, as I will highlight. You might wonder what type of models will predict this type of decays. And actually, there are plenty of ALP models that predict these decay modes. So you can start with models in which you have the ALP that mixes with the pi zero, the standard model. This is very easy. If you consider just the ALP gluon-gluon coupling, you get your mixing, and therefore you will have decays like this. If you consider ALP coupled to W tops, again, you can radiate from the loop. So you produce this type of decays. Even for ALP coupling to leptons, you will induce a flavor-violating effective coupling of this type at two loop, or eventually three loop, depending on the coupling. And then, of course, if you have flavor-violating ALPs, then you will have these flavor-violating decays. So basically, essentially, almost all models you write down for ALPs, you get this type of decays. And that's also one of the reasons that they were previously studied in the literature. What was not really basically studied almost at all were decays of this type mediated by charged currents. For these decays, most of our work goes in this direction. And in terms of models, again, you generated these decays if you have the ALP cup mixed with a pi zero through decays like this. Or also, obviously, if you have the ALP coupled to leptons, and then you can radiate from lepton lags. Okay. All right, so what we will do is to study these benchmarks here that are highlighted, and we will see what type of new measurements we can do, new searches. So let's start with the first one, so flavor change in neutral current decays. And we'll focus on this simple model in which the ALP couples to WW, so the SU2 gauge bosons of the standard model. You can radiate it from this loop, compute this effective ALP DS coupling, or you know, BS coupling and so on, or this flower violating couplings. And what you learn is that you will produce this K long to pi zero A, that's K like the imaginary part of this, so this coupling square. And then correspondingly also the charged mode that now scale like the absolute value of this coupling. So as we would expect, these two decays are highly correlated. And this is a generic feature. So in most of the models for new physics, you imagine that your new physics effect in K long will be correlated to the new physics effect in K plus. There are exceptions, but typically you end up in this type of situation. And this is actually what is called the Grossmann-Neel bound that is relating, as I said, the new physics effect in K plus and K long. Even for standard model decays, actually this was studied initially for standard model decays, because if we wanted to see how much new physics we can put in, for example, K long versus K plus. And we learned that we have this upper bound on the ratio of branchy ratios. This is valid in the standard model in most of models on new physics. So since basically NA62 is going to measure, or it's already measuring this K plus to pi plus neutrino antineutrino, we learn that at Kotto it will be hard to get a huge new physics effect in this decay that is not yet measured, the K long decay. All right. So this to say that whenever we build anything on new physics in K long, we'll get K plus and vice versa. And so ultimately, this NA62 and Kotto experiment are kind of connected. And this is actually what we found here. So basically, what we did here was to recast a lot of data to set a bound on this coupling versus mass. Now, since we have this the AWW coupling, we'll generate also a photon-photon coupling, so the ALP will decay to photons. And then you will have two regimes. Either you are here at a high couplings where the photon is decaying promptly, or you are here where the ALP actually is decaying, is long-lived, and therefore either is invisible to these experiments here, or is visible to beam dump experiments. So here I'm highlighting the several experiments. We see that we have this KTEV looking for K long going to pi zero and two photons. Similarly for NA6248, we have K plus. So this is the high coupling regime. Interestingly enough, we have also, you see, some regions that were probed uniquely by LEP and CDF. This is kind of cute because nowadays, it's hard to see interesting constraints from these old experiments. So these, they were searching for exotic decays of the Z boson. This was a Z boson going to a photon and an ALP, producing a multi-photon type of signature. So this is for the high coupling regime. And then at this low coupling, basically what we are doing is to recast this K2pi nunu bar measurement, because here the ALP is too much long-lived, so it's basically invisible to these experiments. Yeah. Yes? Right, so there was a paper by Eder Izagirre and Brian Schuwe. I think they wrote it when they were here, maybe, or soon after, I don't remember, but anyway. So they were investigating what B factories can do. But actually, yeah, there are no searches yet. So they were estimating what we can do in the future. So you can imagine doing the B to KA and then photon-photon decay.
I'm very surprised this region is open, like, you know, ALP decaying ALP
right.
With large coupling.
Right. Actually, so this is using past data, and then we studied what we can do in the future just using counts, and we see that In a couple of slides, most of this will be covered, actually, even with counts. Yeah. In fact, so we were curious to see if Kotto can do some new physics search for this, because basically, speaking with experimentalists, it seems that NA62 is going to do this search of K plus going to pi plus and then ALP with ALP going to two photons, so this will be taken care of. For KOTO is not clear, and so what we did was a fino analysis of this type of signature, where basically, yeah, we produce the ALP, this X is an ALP, that, and then in the final state you have four photons. This is very challenging, actually. So KOTO is a super cool experiment, but in terms of detector, they have only calorimetry here. So they cannot really track the particles that you produce. So you measure the energy deposition in your calorimeter, and then you try to, you know, conclude if you have a four-photon signature or not. Of course, you have a lot of combinatorics because you don't know what photon comes from where, if it is from an ALP or from a pi zero. So, and also you don't know where decay long is decaying because it's long lived, so it can decay anywhere in your decay volume. So you don't know where the vertex is. So kinematically, you have a lot of possible combinations you can do. And so in our analysis, what we did was first to look for the pair of photons that reconstruct a pi zero mass. And once that you find that pair in your events, then you can also identify where the vertex is. So this is just a kinematical condition. And then also you require that the full four-photon invariant mass reconstruct the decay-long mass. So this is basically to reconstruct the full event. Of course, to do that, you need to have a very, very good energy, a very, very small energy smearing, because otherwise you cannot really reconstruct all of this. So we did simulations trying to follow as much as possible the experimental information, for example, this energy smearing. We simulated also backgrounds. These were the two backgrounds that we were simulating. And then we found this type of limit on the branching ratio. And we saw that limits at a level of 10 to minus 8, 10 to minus 9 could be possible using the full data set of KOTO in the future. Of course, it's, you know, these analyses are kind of tricky. So we tried to see what happened if we put some systematics. So we added some unknown source of background. Since we are theorists, so we don't know exactly, you know, the backgrounds that we are going to have. And we saw that indeed, if we have even a 10% of systematics, we would lose something like one order of magnitude or so in the ratio branching ratio. So this is telling us that, you know, we are quite confident that we can extract a very interesting bound. The exact bound has to be seen by experimentalists, really. That's right, yeah. Because if your energies are a little bit off, you don't know if indeed you reconstruct a pion mass exactly and where the vertex is, and then everything is, yeah.
You don't measure the vertex directly.
No, it's through kinematical, through these conditions. Then
if your ALP is not defined,
mm-hmm.
you misreconstruct the...
No, so you have still a pi zero that you produce. So two photons, we reconstruct a pi zero. And then the other, they need to reconstruct the ALP mass. And that's why, I mean, if the ALP mass is close to pi zero, you see here the bound shoots up, because at that point you have this background that is really, you know, overwhelming.
Ask about the
So there was one thing that was worrying us the most in this analysis, namely the background coming from 3 pi 0. So you have a branch ratio k long to 3 pi 0 that is small, I don't remember exactly how much, but it's still non-negligible. So 3 pi 0 would produce 6 photons. And then you can say, okay, you veto. Exactly. Exactly, some can be collimated, some you can misreconstruct, and so on. So, and for theories to simulate this six-photon background is very hard, so we didn't know exactly. So we put these systematics to see if you have, in general, new sources of background, how much your bound would get worse. That's why we put these systematics.
And the collaboration gives you some efficiency for
this? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this like energy smearing, or for example, how far away the photons need to hit the calorimeter in order to be resolved, or this is information that we get from the experiment. Yeah. This would be seen as a different particle if compared to photons. Yeah. So the short answer is no. Yeah.
Well, 3 pi in the K.
Sure, yeah, it has, but then, you know, you deplete your number of events because you are vetoing. I mean, if you start to see six photons, you say, okay, I send this event away. But the point is that sometimes the six photons can look like four, and that is the problem. Yeah. All right.
And the standard moderate for two gammas?
Uh-huh. I'm forgetting, honestly.
I think that, that must be a very small pressure.
True, the problem is...
KPO is 10 minus 5. And KPO gamma, gamma plus a pi.
I thought it was around 10 to minus 4 or 5, something like that. The problem is that it extends everywhere. And that is the, yeah, it's something like that, I think, and yeah, but then of course it doesn't, you know, it's not just in 1B, exactly, yeah, that's right, yeah, and actually this shape that you see here is exactly the shape of the two photons, of this background here, that's why you have this,
yeah, my point was just that the 2γ one also has probably some systematic.
True. But that we have also data, so we could compare. Actually, yeah.
I guess you constrain the
shape. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Or just like a continuum.
Yeah. So yeah, for those, yeah, it's hard to say exactly. But that's why, yeah, we wanted to see. I mean, this 10% of systematics seem to include a bit of everything, and then. You would get a bound here, but it's true. I mean, also this additional source that you mentioned is something that should be studied by experimentalists, really. Yeah, and actually now they are working on this analysis, so hopefully we'll have a result at a certain point. Yeah,
but they actually have results for similar search. You see, like the pion imposter.
Yeah, that's true, but it's not. It's not exactly what we want here, right?
Right.
In the entire, yeah. True.
That one is harder than this one.
That's yeah, maybe, yes, true. Yeah, they can do it, and yeah. It's also a very, very small collaboration, so it's like, all right, so if we take that, and then we put it in this plane, you see that we can extend the coverage till all this region here of parameter space, and you can almost get to the region of bin dumps. And then also you can extend this invisible ALP. So you see that you can almost cover the entire range if you are like below 200 MeV or so. So this will be interesting to see with the future chem factories data, right? So this to say, so the take-home messages are that these decay modes that I'm presenting here, they have been a bit studied in the literature, but there is no sense of, so what we did new was to understand what COTO can do new in the future, and then interpret everything in terms of this benchmark model for the ALP. Mm-hmm. So you mean this purple to go down? Very good. So here what we did, so we had this line here, that was the previous NA6248 experiment, and what we did was just the rescaling with statistics. And this was not a targeted search. So they did the search for K plus going to pi plus gamma gamma without a resonance. And in some kinematical region that was limiting the mass range to be here. And that's why then we rescale and we just keep the same mass range. But it's true that you could go to lower, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is the hope that NE62 will do, yeah, absolutely. All right, so this is for the neutral current. And then as I anticipated for the charge current, here we have quite more new stuff compared to the literature. So the question we want to ask is, can we do measurement for a decay model like this? So ALP produced from charged pion decays. So this decay mode is interesting because actually you can have a sizable branch ratio because you don't have, most of the times, as we will see, you don't have helicity suppression or phase space suppression. And this is different from the standard model. So these decays here are either helicity suppressed or phase space suppressed. So we can have good hopes for seeing new physics there. And again, in terms of models that we can probe either a model in which the ALP mixes with the pi zero. So if you have the coupling with gluons or the coupling with up and down quarks, you generate this mixing. Or you can test the ALP coupled to leptons through diagrams like this. So let's start with the first, so the mixing. So what you can do is to compute this type of diagrams. So the amplitude will depend on two form factors because you have different combination of momenta that can enter. Interestingly enough, only one form factor is important because this F0 form factor here will come with a ME over M pi square suppression, so you can neglect it. So only this F plus form factor enters, and this is in a good approximation equal to 1. There is a theorem that is telling us that is equal to 1 as long as the Q square exchange is small. And this happens actually for alpha masses that are not too small. We put like a lower bound of like a 10 MeV to avoid the regime in which the Q square is too large, because otherwise we would need to know much better form factors than what we did. Anyway, we did all the calculation, and indeed we find that there is no helicity suppression anymore, as we would have expected. So you produce these ALPs, and then the ALPs can decay actually to photons, because once that you have the mixing with the pi zero, you also get the photon coupling. Of course, this photon coupling can have a UV contribution as well, depending on your theory, if you have an additional A gamma gamma, A FF tilde type of coupling. So basically, the type of signature that you can have are here. So you have a positron, gamma gamma, and invisible, or simply positron and invisible type of signature, right? So what can we do? So first of all, again, we used all the data to see what bounds we can extract. So there was this Pinu that was an old experiment at Triumph. I think it was taking data until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, something like that. And so they gave us the most precise measurement of this standard model decay that you see here. And what we're doing is to measure very accurately the energy spectrum of the positron. Of course, this energy spectrum would be affected if you also produce an ALP. And luckily enough, they give us the residual. So these are actual data. These are the residual as a function of the energy deposited in the Pinu calorimeter. So again, Pinu was an experiment measuring decays of the pi plus at rest. Here you have some calorimetry, and they give us a residual so that we don't have to worry about modeling and so on. And we can compare these residuals with the distributions that we get from our signal. Because in our signal, so if you produce an ALP that is invisible, then you can measure only the energy spectrum of the positron. And these are two distributions for two different masses, just as an example of the ALP, so 40 MeV and 80 MeV. If the ALP decays to photons, then you have different distributions, because at this point, also, photons can contribute to the energy deposited in this calorimeter. And then you see the corresponding distributions. Yes. Yes, it will come actually. First I do pions, but it will come the counts. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Very good. Yeah. And okay, very good. So we compare, we do a shape analysis and compare these residuals with the shape that we got from these alps. And this is the type of bound that we get on the mixing angle between the pi zero and the alp.
Difference between this one, in case your V-twinning events that have both
on. No, so we are including that energy because we don't have actual information. So we have the total energy that is measured by by this calorimeter. So we don't know from what is exactly. Yeah, yeah. So we sum them over. Yeah, that's right. Of course, designing. I mean, having this pioneer experiment, then you can do a more targeted analysis. So this is the bound, and we see that we can get. Up to mixing angle at a level, mixing angle squared at a level of 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 5. And we see also that there is not much of a difference in between the bound for an invisible or for a visible ALP. They are pretty similar, these blue and green regions. So this is the first set of data that we considered. And the second set of data was coming from the Pi Beta experiment, that is even an older one in the 90s, was running in the 90s at PSI. And this experiment actually gave us the most precise measurement of this other standard model decay, so with the Pi zero. And they were measuring the photons coming out of the Pi zero. And of course, if you produce an ALP, then it can give you also two photons. So once more, we can compare with data. And now the data that we have are data as a function of the opening angle between the two photons. Now, for the standard model, you expect that the opening angle is pretty big. So these photons are back to back because pi plus and pi zero have basically the same mass. For us, if we have an ALP, then the angle can be quite smaller. And so in gray here, you see the standard model distribution for the pi zero. And the several colored lines are coming from different ALP masses. And as we would expect, if the ALP is getting lighter and lighter, this angle gets smaller and smaller. Unfortunately, yeah, we don't have data beyond 160 degrees. So it's hard to set bounds for ALPs that have a mass quite different than the pi zero. But we use this data, so we did again. We look at the number of events in this opening angle range here, and doing so, we saw that the bound was actually pretty strong. You see that you get up to almost 10 to the minus 6, but unfortunately, stop at very in a limited range of masses, precisely for this reason that you don't go to lower angles. But this again is something that we could do in the future with Pioneer because they could collect data with an opening angle that is much smaller than 160 degrees. So we will be able to test additional regions here. OK. And so this model, this bound is pretty model independent, if you want. It's just telling us how large the mixing with the pi zero can be. And then depending on the model that you use to get this mixing, then you can put together these bounds with other experiments. Very good. So here, there is, let's see. So the short answer is not much. you will get more sensitive ones that you extend to lower masses. So it's not clear how much you can extend. But in general, you don't get much you don't expect huge changes. Maybe the change will be of order one, not more than that.
You just showed including the systematic of the...
This...
that just data statistics, or does that include?
Yeah, yeah, that includes systematics on the background. But the question was that, yeah, this the signal, so this colored colored lines can be a little bit shifted if you have a different form factor that does depend on Q square. But yeah, as I said, you don't expect much changes. Because let's go back here. I don't have it. So you expect that. Let's see. Corrections. I think corrections should scale like Q square over lambda QCD square. So.
Actually, I think, don't you get this form factor from A to pi pi?
Not this one here, actually. Yeah. There is a theorem, actually, that is telling us that if you go into the regime in which Q square goes to zero, this form factor is equal to one. There is this Ademollo Gatto theorem that is telling us that it is identical to one. But then, yeah, there are corrections that, as I said, scale like Q square over the QCD scale square. Yeah, something like that. True, true. I wish I put another plot. So it depends a bit on the model. Usually you expect to scale like f pi over fa with some parameters. And these parameters can be also quite small, actually. But if you consider just the f pi over fa scaling, you see that is like two or three orders of magnitude above f pi, so it's pretty small. It's true, yeah. So in terms of theories, you're probing very low fa, or you have some cancellation that tells you that the prefactor in front is small. Let's see if I have the. So you, 1 second. So, for example, as I said, it's model dependent, but if you take the coupling with up and down quarks, you generate a mixing. And this mixing, you see, depends on this difference between up and down because of isospin that you're breaking. So you can get cancellations in that way, for example. But it's true. I mean, overall, you expect that the new physics scale that you are probing is pretty low. This is then, of course, you can see more in detail the model and so on, and this give you a way to lower it. Yeah. But in general, I mean, overall, this type of probes you expect. I mean, we'll see later. There are other probes that maybe test electroweak scale FA or 1 TV FA. Going beyond that with this type of experiment is very hard. Yeah. All right. And yeah, as I said, then you can specify your model that leads to this pi zero alp mixing. And if you have a model in which you have only the mixing that also is inducing this alp photon-photon coupling, then everything is fixed, and then you can put together these bounds that we found with bounds on the A gamma gamma coupling. And this is what you would get, where you have these additional bounds here at low mixing that are coming from beam dump experiments. And you see that indeed you complement pretty nicely what you can do at beam dumps, okay, because you cover a larger coupling range. All right. But this again is model dependent and because, yeah, it depends on different couplings than just this mixing. All right, so this is one thing I want to discuss. And then the second model, so this is the last study that we did, was a model in which we have an alp that couples to leptons. And here we discover quite interesting features and claims in the literature that were not completely right. So from the effective Lagrangian point of view, you can write down obviously these three couplings here, one with a vector, axial vector, and the coupling with neutrinos. Okay. Now, indeed, as Mina was questioning, what about this vector versus axial vector coupling? So there are claims that say that the vector coupling is unphysical, and actually we'll argue that this is not entirely true. We'll see why this is the case. So it is true that if your goal is to compute decay modes like this, so pi plus going to an alp, positron, neutrino, only two of these couplings will enter. And this is coming from the fact that you have, at the classical level, you have the conservational lepton number that is telling you that one combination will go away because of this conservation. And indeed, you know, using this effective Lagrangian, you can do your calculation. So you would radiate the alp from either the lepton line or the neutrino line. And you get, you know, a branch ratio that looks like this. What is important to this big equation is that, indeed, you have dependence only on two parameters. So either this and this, and this will be a linear combination. And notice actually that you can suppress, so you can lift up the elasticity suppression, but only if you have this combination of couplings that is non-zero. And if you look at this combination, this is the combination that is exactly zero in the limit of SU2. So if you have this SU2 invariance, this combination of couplings is zero, so your decay mode is still elasticity suppressed, as you see here, ME square. Okay. So basically, to lift up this elasticity suppression, you need a model for your ALP that is violating SU2. Okay, so your UQ charges should know about the SU2 symmetry and then break that symmetry. We didn't study in detail models that do that, but in terms of operators, you can have an operator that is violating this SU2. For example, an operator like this, where this is the Higgs of the standard model, the Higgs doublet, and L is the SU2 doublet lepton of the standard model. And then, you know, once you go to the broken phase, indeed, you break SU2, so you generate this coupling that is non-zero. Okay. But then you see that, indeed, you do have dependence on this vector coupling. That is this G bar that you see here. Now, you could do the calculation in a different basis, and we found this new basis more educative. So you see that this is the derivative basis. Then you can do, you know, you can integrate by part and then couple the alp with the current.
Sorry, what is the muon mass?
The muon mass? Sorry, where do you see the muon mass? Here. I think, sorry, I think this might be, very good, the ratio, branch ratio of pi plus to mu plus neutrino. That is the main branch ratio in the standard model. So it's normalized to that. That's why you see m mu.
The ratio, branch ratio.
I think so, yes. Sorry about this. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense because.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, sorry. I should have put there. Because it's basically one, but it can be confusing otherwise. Yeah, thanks. So if you do a change of basis and you go to the basis in which your interaction can be written like this with a derivative of the current, what you see is that the current is composed by three pieces. So you have the standard piece, in which the alp couple with the gamma 5. And this has been broadly studied in the literature. Okay. Then you have the anomaly terms that are also very well known. But then you have an extra piece that was previously neglected in the literature, where basically you have the alp coupling to a W, a charged lepton, and the neutrino. And this is the piece that you see here. It goes to zero in the limit of SU2. Okay, so I think this is much nicer to work in this basis because you see that you generate a new coupling that you would not have in the SU2 limit. So this is what you call a weak vertex, that is this four legs vertex here. All right. And again, this was previously neglected because the idea was always to write in a SU2 invariant way. So we pointed out that this vertex can be important, and we'll see the phenomenological consequences in a second. And then also we computed new bounds for this standard vertex here, right?
Very interesting. It's exactly what happens in the standard model for emission of photons. If
that yes, true. True. And then depending if you have an SU2 preserving or SU2 violating model, your rate for decays like this is very different. And putting here the pi plus, I can do also the kaon or discharged current decays. And you see that if you have a weak violating model, you have this enhancement by m pi squared over m e squared that is a large factor. Okay, so you expect branching ratios that are much bigger. And therefore, you also expect to have much more interesting experimental probes. And so let's see what are the experimental probes, and then I will conclude. So again, first we took a look at all the data. So interestingly enough, there was an old search for a signature like this in the context of a very light scalar. But for this search, it doesn't matter if it is a scalar or a pseudoscalar. So this was a syndrome experiment. You see, this is a bound. So this was in the 80s as a function of the mass and as a function of the lifetime. This is the bound branch ratio. And then you can take this bound and then interpret in terms of your model. And if you do so, you get this bound on this coupling GEE in the weak preserving and weak violating cases. And as expected, in the weak violating case, the bound is much more stringent. You see here is 10 to minus 5 instead of 10 to minus 4. And also, since we don't know, we haven't done yet the FINO analysis for the Pioneer experiment that can do this search as well. We draw this line at branch ratio 10 to minus 11 to see what type of coverage we would have if Pioneer can reach bounds at the level of 10 to minus 11. That are not that crazy because you see that with this old experiment, we were already at the level of few 10 to minus 11 or 10 to minus 10. So, yeah.
Ask like for the
yeah, so this is, as I was mentioning to Mina, so you can compute this scale here, and I think here is something like 1 TV or so, around here, roughly. Yeah, so you can...
In other words, do you really have a GE or any enhancement, or actually the GE is secretly piling?
Yes, very good. We normalize the coupling in this way, just a matter of normalization, no? And then you see that for one, you have an enhancement, the first term, and the other one not. So it's a relative enhancement. But what you know is that if you have SU2 conservation, you still have elicity suppression.
Right. But the non-conserving one
doesn't. Exactly.
That one you're also trying to set.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah.
Then that comes from this.
So.
Can you write down a UV condition where that guy is not?
Yes, you can. Yeah. We played a little bit around, even if we didn't study it much, but you can do it like with new, like even with new sterile neutrinos, you can have that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a good question. Yes. So going back to our bound, so this is the bound that we get, and then we want to, you know, compare that with other old bounds that were already. Uh-huh. Yes, that's why we don't have yet a paper out. It's something that one should study, that's true. Because you have this either vector-like leptons, charged leptons, or neutrinos that mix with the leptons of the standard model. And then, yeah, that's a question. Yeah.
I'm not sure, you know, that you can do with that operator, but if I had to guess, there's a...
Or you can do it to recharge leptons, but then you have to worry more about direct searches for vector-like leptons at LHC. Yeah, depends on the coupling. Yeah, that's right. But yeah, this necessarily, I mean, needs more studies, but there are ways, but one has to see a bit how it works. Exactly, yeah. I mean, we were wondering also, for example, like running, can the running, like if you fix your Lagrangian and then you run it, you can generate while running with a photon some SU2 breaking effect, but these are really small because of running. So you need really a breaking of SU2 that you put in your theory. All right, so these are the bounds, and then we were comparing with other bounds that were pointed out in the literature, and this is what we got. So we did this analysis here. So this was a four electron analysis by Babar. So they were looking for a dark photon decaying to E plus E minus. And then you can produce in a similar way the ALP and reinterpret this Babar search for the dark photon in terms of this ALP. And this is what you get here and here. And then here there were beam dumps here, as well as supernovae here at low couplings. So you see that, and also G minus 2 of the electron that can set this diagonal bound here. So you see that basically the bottom line is that this pion decays can cover new region of parameter space, especially in this weak violating case, but also in the weak preserving case.
All right. How about neutrino electrons scattering?
Neutrino? Yes. True. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how sizable it would be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Roughly. True. That's a good point. Yeah. Then we did the exercise also for kaons, as Mina was asking before. I think this was your question. You can do the same calculation. I mean, the calculation is super similar. And here there is no dedicated search. So what we did was to take this old paper from this experiment at BNL. And what they did was to measure the branch ratio K plus to three electrons and one neutrino with the biggest invariant mass below 150 MeV. So you can do your, you know, kinematical cut and then impose that the branch ratio, this new physics branch ratio, is not too big compared to the experimental uncertainty. And doing that, actually, you get these bounds in red here and here. Or again, in the weak violating case, this is more important, as expected. And since, you know, in principle, again, NA62 can do this search, we draw this line at branch ratio 10 to the minus 12 to see how much we could cover if they are able to set a bound at this level. That we saw is not really crazy compared to other measurements that they can do. And if you do, you see that you can cover, especially in this weak violating case, you can cover a huge region here of parameter space. Right? And then also, there is one interesting consequence for the LHC, because at LHC, you could produce this exotic W decay. So the W decay into an ALP, a positron and a neutrino. And again, there is no dedicated search for this. This is quite important for the weak violating case. Actually, it only arises in this SU2 violating case. And what we did was to impose that this branch ratio is not bigger than the experimental uncertainty on the total width of the W, that is super conservative. Doing that, we got this bound here that is weak, but this is just using the measurement of the total width. If we are able to do this search and with a bound at a level of 10 to minus 5, that again, comparing with other searches at LHC is not too crazy, then we would get down here. This is the 10 to minus 5 branch ratio line. And we see again that we could cover a new parameter space with a new LHC search that has not been thought before. Right? Okay. And the last thing I think that I wanted to mention is that once that you open up this idea of using charged current decays, then you have to redo a lot of calculations also, for example, for bin dump experiments. Because if you take a proton bin dump experiment as charm, then you produce a lot of these mesons, light mesons. And then you have to wonder what happens if you consider this charged meson decays through charge currents. And again, this was not done, so this is what we did, using charge currents and also introducing heavier mesons. And we got that we get a little bit of a region here beyond the previous bin dumps that can be probed simply using this charge current meson decays. And again, every time then now that we do the exercise of using a proton bin dump experiment to probe bulbs, we should introduce this charge current decays. And you might wonder, okay, since we have this model with a coupling to leptons, then we have also flavor violating decays of the mesons. So we already discussed about this K to pi A, and this K to pi A is also generated in these models. Plus, it is generated at higher loops. You see that you couple to left-handed dielectrons, so you have a two-loop effect, otherwise a three-loop effect. You can compute these and again compare with data, also for B decays. There are no targeted analyses, so we used some of these experimental papers in a different context. For example, if you take this LHCb paper, you will see that this is a paper for the standard model measurement of B2KEE. This was done also in the context of B anomalies. But then they show data as a function of the Q square beans for EE. And then you can interpret that as a bound in that mass range for the ALP. But this to say that one can do much better than this. And let's see what. So these were the old plots I showed you. And let's see, so if we do this recast of data that were not targeted on these ALP searches, we see that we have additional regions that can be probed here, especially from this B meson decays. And then again, if one has targeted searches, one can do much better, hopefully. All right. Okay, so this leads to my conclusions. So in this talk, I wanted to convince you that there is a lot of prospects for testing action-like particles at flavor experiments. I find quite exciting this opportunity of using this newly approved experiment, Pioneer, and so using charged pion decays to produce ALPs. And we pointed out that there are these charge current decays of mesons that were overlooked in the literature and that can be announced in this modest for ALPS in which we break SU2. Thanks. Oh, there was a Zoom. Okay. Yeah. Very good.
You're recorded.
Yeah, this I gather, but.
Questions then?